tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, science fiction. Later on, Lights Out from 1947. But first, it's X-1 with a Theodore Sturgeon story, Mr. Costello, Hero, an NBC episode from July 3rd, 1956.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Mr. Costello, Hero, by Theodore Sturgeon.
It began the day the skipper called me into his cabin. I'd been a purser aboard the spaceship Star Climber for almost 12 years, and I'd never yet been asked to Iron Man's cabin. But then a lot of strange things had been happening on this trip to Borongwen.
Come in. Oh, sit down, purser. I said sit down.
Yes, sir.
All right. Here's a deck of cards. Deal.
Sir?
I said deal. 5-card draw. Go on, man.
Yes, sir.
Well?
3 of a kind, sir.
You didn't draw.
I beg your pardon?
When you play draw poker, you're supposed to draw. If you don't draw, you're supposed to give your opponent a chance to draw. Now, mister, did you ask me to draw?
Well, we haven't been playing that way recently.
Who changed the rules?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you something else. You stood a watch last night in the ship's galley.
Why, yes, sir.
Has anybody ordered a galley watch?
Well, no, sir, but it isn't against the rules, is it?
Against the rules? No, it isn't. Now, tell me, does the cook mind having a man watching him 24 hours a day?
Well, no, sir. You see, that way he knows everybody can trust him.
You mean that way you know he won't poison you?
Well, yes, sir.
Now, tell me, Purser. Who aboard this ship suggested that the cook might try to poison you?
Well, I really couldn't say, sir. It just came up. Well, Cookie doesn't mind, sir. Really, he doesn't. He says if he's watched all the time, then nobody can suspect him, so he doesn't mind.
All right. Now, let's proceed to something else. How long has it been customary for the deck officer to bring a witness with him when he takes over the watch?
That's out of my department,
now,
sir.
Now, think hard, Purser. Did you ever hear of a deck officer bringing a witness with him before this trip?
No, sir.
Or stand a galley watch?
No, sir.
Or play draw poker without drawing?
No, sir.
Now, one more thing.
Yes, sir?
We never had Mr. Costello as a passenger on this ship before, did we?
Mr. Costello?
Mr. Costello.
No, sir, we didn't.
Okay. Ask him to come to my cabin.
But
that's an order, mister!
Yes, sir. Let me tell you about Mr. Costello. He was our only passenger. Hello, Mr. Costello.
Hello, Purser.
Oh, am I interrupting something?
Not at all. Come sit down. I'm landing on Borongwen tomorrow, so I won't have much more chance to talk.
Well, I'll finish this later, Mr. Costello.
Nonsense. Honest men should be open with each other. Go ahead, show him what you discovered.
Well,
the Purser's a fine man.
Well, Mr. Costello asked me to show him in the space code what a captain can and cannot do.
Now, just a minute, Third. You wanted to show me, didn't you?
Well, yes.
So, actually, you're going over the limitations of a space captain's power of your own free will, right?
Well, I guess so, sure.
Sure. Tell the Purser the part that you just read me.
Well, it's a sort of safeguard against letting the skipper's power go to his head. Like, suppose a time comes when the captain begins to act up, you see. The crew figures a lunatic has taken over the bridge. Well, the crew can send a delegate for an accounting. If the skipper refuses, then the crew can confine the skipper.
Well, isn't there something about the proceedings having to be radioed at the time they happen?
Now, there is a man who is absolutely fair. Witnesses for the watch, safeguards on the kitchen. I tell you, you're all good men here. Yes, sir, this is the safest ship I've ever seen. Gives a fellow a nice feeling to know he isn't going to get his orders wrong or accidentally find something in the food.
Yes, sir. I wonder why we never thought of that before. Oh, I nearly forgot. Mr. Costello, the skipper wants to see you in his cabin.
Oh?
Right away.
I see. Will you come along with me just as a friendly precaution?
Hmm?
You can wait outside.
Well...
Well, in that way, both of us will know what happened. I'll never be able to say that you didn't give me the message, and you'll be able to say I went to see the skipper. Right?
Well, I guess so. You know, that this buddy system sort of makes everything safer, doesn't it?
That's right, Purser. You can't do anything bad if you have a friend along to witness.
Mr. Costello and I went to the captain's cabin, and I waited outside. After a while, I could hear them shouting. That is, I could hear the captain shouting. Mr. Costello never raised his voice.
And let me tell you, Mr. Costello, that if my crew questions my sanity, they have legal recourse. But you can be sure that meanwhile, if a single man aboard questions my authority, he will learn that I am master of this ship, even if he must learn it at the point of a gun. Now, sir, get out.
Wow. You okay, Mr. Costello?
Oh, yes, I'm fine. Did you hear anything?
Well, yes, I did.
Would you remember what you heard?
I think so.
Let's see. You see this little gadget, no bigger than a pocket watch?
Well, yes, sir, what is it?
Listen, I'll open it.
If a single man aboard questions my authority, he will learn that I am master of this ship, even if he must learn it at the point of a gun.
Whose voice is that?
Why, it's the captain.
Good man.
But how...
That's simple. You see, this little pin that I wear on my lapel here? This is a microphone. This watch is a magnetic recorder. I just use it as a toy, of course.
Well, I'll be darned.
You see, Purser, I'm a collector. What do I collect? Voices. Voices anywhere, anybody, anytime. Listen.
A lunatic has taken over the bridge.
Why, that's the third officer.
Mm-hmm. Listen to this now.
I better not, Mr. Costello. I wouldn't want you thinking I take bribes from passengers.
Recognize it?
Why, that's my voice.
Exactly, the time you brought me the special radio message from Earth Central.
And you offered me a blue gemstone, and I said that...
Hey, listen to this.
I take bribes from passengers.
Well, if that isn't the end...
Cute, huh? Well, I guess I'll get back to my cabin and pack. When do we arrive at Borenguin?
6, tomorrow morning.
Oh, good. By the way, I'd like you to come see me when you put in there again.
Well, that's very nice, sir, but you're an important man, and I'm just...
Nonsense. I insist that you visit me.
Well, that's real nice.
Oh, by the way, what's the major trade on Borenguin?
Blunker.
Blunker?
Yes, it's a kind of soft fur. You can make a warm coat out of it that will roll up into a thimble.
You don't say. And the Blunker trade, that's carried out by trappers?
Mostly.
Mm-hmm.
They work alone and bring in the pelts.
I see. They spend a lot of time... Alone, hmm?
That's right. You know, sometimes I envy them. I mean, working on a ship, you're almost never alone, and the way I see it, a man needs to be alone sometimes.
Correction. Only, I repeat, only if he has something to hide. Otherwise, to be alone is antisocial. And evil.
We put in at Borenguin the following morning. I stood at the ramp of the ship and checked out the supplies and checked in the Glunker pelts that we were taking back to Earth. The Borenguin people were a nice, independent, easygoing bunch. I knew a Borenguin woman named Nola, and she came out to the ship to see me. 15,000 Glunker pelts. Check. 300 pounds of radioactive ergite. Check. Just put that shipment of show seed over next to the ramp.
Hello.
What? Well, Nola.
I saw your ship on the cargo manifest.
Well, it's good to see you.
Will you be on Borenguin long?
Just for a day or so. Listen, I have to get this cargo checked in. Can we see each other later?
I'll be through at the spaceport at 16 hours.
Well, good. Suppose I... Oh, excuse me a minute. Here comes our passenger.
Well, good morning. I see we've arrived safely.
Yes, sir. I expected you out before this.
I had a few items to get in order.
Oh, Mr. Costello, this is Nola. She's a Borinquena.
Well, it's very nice to meet you.
This is a real nice guy, Nola. See that he doesn't have any trouble with customs, will you? Nola works here.
Any friend of the purser?
Wonderful. Well, I'll say goodbye now. Remember to look me up, purser, next time you hit Borinquen.
I will. He gave me that big, warm handshake of his and clapped his arm on my shoulder. Gave you a good feeling to know that a big shot like Mr. Costello really liked you. I got the rest of the cargo checked in. Took maybe 3 hours. Then I was about to go in and ask the skipper for leave when a couple of guys with Space Bureau credentials came aboard.
All right, that's it, boys. Close the hatches.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Space Bureau. Is Captain Ireson aboard?
Why, yes.
You're the purser, huh?
That's right. Something wrong?
Would you mind answering a couple of questions?
Not at all.
Has the captain been behaving strangely this trip?
Well, not strangely, exactly.
Anything unusual?
Well, no. He called me in for a card game.
Mm-hmm. Does that happen often?
No, never happened before.
Was he upset?
Yes, I guess he was.
Okay. This gentleman would like you to answer a few simple questions. Meanwhile, I'll look up the skipper.
They took the skipper off the ship and left Borinquen the next morning with a new skipper assigned by the port captain. There was a rumor later that old Iron Man had been court-martialed or something. Nobody knew for certain. We made the rounds after that. Sigma, Nightingale, Carano, all the planets in the fourth system. We even went back to Earth with a load of glizzard skins and black prints. It must have been about, 16 months later that we made for Borinquen again. I was talking to the third officer.
Purser.
Hmm?
I'd like to talk to you.
Go ahead.
We land at Borinquen tomorrow.
So?
I don't like it.
What's wrong with Borinquen? It's one of the best ports in the system.
It was.
What do you mean?
We got a radiogram from the Borinquen Customs a little while ago.
Okay, we got a radiogram.
Oh,
some bureaucrat sent it. Nothing'll happen.
Another thing. The way it was signed.
How was it signed?
Loneliness is evil. Port Captain Borinquen.
Loneliness is evil?
That's what it said.
On a government radiogram?
Mm-hmm.
Loneliness is evil. Where did I hear that before? Well, we touched down on Borinquen at 1,200 hours. What a change. The spaceport was deserted. The only people who came aboard were two agents from customs. They censored our tapes and checked our written literature. I finally started a conversation with them. Excuse me, sir?
Yeah?
There is a Borinquena named Nola that used to work in customs. I wonder if she's still there.
I wouldn't know.
Well, the reason I asked, she usually meets my ship when it comes in.
Yeah, I see.
Well, maybe I'll look her up. She has an apartment on R Street.
She won't be living there. Try Central Barracks.
Central Barracks?
That big warehouse near the spaceport.
I thought they stored the Glunker furs there.
They don't use the warehouses to store things anymore.
No?
They need them for the people.
The people?
You haven't been on Borinquen since the Brotherhood movement?
I haven't been here for 16 months.
Well, you'll find that the people have moved into the warehouses now. Well,
what about the apartments? What about the homes?
They're used only for storage space.
I don't get it.
Look, we haven't got time to explain now. My partner and I have to get back to Central Control.
Well, maybe I'll go to try and find Nola.
Better take a companion.
What for?
They don't like soloists on Borinquen.
Since when?
Since Brotherhood. No ladder has a single rung, you know.
So what?
It takes 100 pair of hands to build a house.
Okay.
A single pair is useless. Not only useless, but evil.
I don't get your drift.
All humanity is made up of many parts. Any part that wants to go off by itself hurts the main thing. What good would your hand be if a single finger suddenly decided to go off by itself?
Listen, is this a gag?
It's deadly serious.
Well, suppose I want to go off by myself.
We'll help you.
And suppose I don't want to be helped?
Then you're a trapper, a glunker. You'll be sent into the bush country where the other soloists are sent.
Holy smokes, this place has gone mad.
Are you coming with us?
Look, suppose that I want to walk across the field to the warehouse by myself, all alone.
You can try. But you won't get two steps before they pick you up. Take our advice. Get a companion.
I let them take me over to the barracks, the place that used to be a warehouse. It was unbelievable. The place had been completely cleared of every wall, every partition. There, in front of my eyes, were 10,000 beds, cots, and mattresses spread out over the entire floor of the warehouse. The light was blinding. Huge floods and spots bathed every square inch. Nothing was concealed. Even the plumbing, showers, tubs, sinks were lined up against an open wall. The agents came in with me and stood at the door. A cluster of Borangwin people waited in a roped-off area.
This is it.
Wow.
The customs personnel are in that third aisle, going north.
I'll walk down there. Thanks for the company.
It's a duty. Wait. I'll get you a companion. Anyone for the third aisle going north? Third aisle going north. Yeah. There comes a man. He'll accompany you.
A small, frightened-looking man detached himself from the waiting group and went with me up the aisle of the warehouse. The sound, the smells were frightening. Thousands of people milling around. No privacy. Everyone terrified of being alone. I wondered how this had happened. Finally, after an hour of searching, I found my friend Nola.
So that's the way it is on Borangwin now. Nobody seems to know just how it happened. Just seemed better to be with somebody all the time. Then nobody could accuse you of doing anything wrong.
But somebody must have started these accusations. Somebody must have put the fear into people.
I don't know. It started with the Glunkers.
The fur trappers?
That's right. We began to hear things about them. That they were thieves, that they planned to take over the city. Just rumors, of course. And pretty soon, if you didn't like somebody, you called him a Glunker. Then there were signs. No Glunkers allowed. You know?
Oh, I saw some.
You began to hear about it on the televisor, and pretty soon they appointed a committee to investigate and find out if there was any truth to the rumors about the Glunkers. It was headed by Mr. Costello.
Costello? Mr. Costello?
He's a big shot now. Owns half the city, I guess.
Well, it can't be the same one.
Yes, it is. I've seen him.
When did everybody move to the central warehouse?
When the police started picking up soloists, everybody began to move in together. Didn't take long. That's the strange thing. How little time it took.
I talked to Nola for a while, then I couldn't take it any longer. I had to get out to get away by myself. I found somebody who was going toward the exit, and after a while, we were standing outside the warehouse entrance.
I'm going south.
I'm going north to the spaceport.
Oh.
Tell me, does anybody travel alone?
Sometimes we take a chance on it. I guess I'll have to take a chance right now. I'll be late for my job if somebody doesn't come along soon.
Where do you work?
That orange building right across the street.
Would you like me to walk with you?
Oh, you'll just get stranded there. I'll make a run for it. The street looks clear.
Well, thanks for the company.
Not at all. So long.
Hey, mister, look out, that car. Look out! Ah! Why, you...
Is he dead?
Yes, sir.
That was deliberate. I saw you...
Hello, Purser.
It's Mr. Costello.
Yes, I'm sorry about the accident. My chauffeur was...
He tried to run away.
That's what happens to soloists. If he'd had a companion to warn him, to thrust him out of the way. You understand that, don't you, Purser?
I don't know.
Climb into the car. You can't go wandering about Borangwin alone.
Well, I...
Police will take care of the body. It's all right.
Okay, if you say so, Mr. Costello.
Drive to the spaceport.
Yes, sir.
Well, what do you think of our little planet?
Well...
I knew you'd like it. Just think of it, Purser. All humankind, a single unit. Yes, this is a people that has found the truth. It awes me. Makes me humble. Speak up, man. I'm your friend.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not sure I like it.
Well, take your time. Nobody has to make a man see the truth. Is that right?
Well...
That's right, isn't it?
Yes, I guess it is.
Fine. Yes, only the trappers refuse to see the truth.
Are they really dangerous?
Dangerous? They go out and spend weeks alone by themselves, don't they? Alone with their own evil thoughts.
Evil thoughts?
We all have them, you know. Even you. For example, you remember this?
Well, I...
Well, this should refresh your mind. Listen to this.
I take bribes from passengers.
Your voice, Purser, and a very evil thought, too.
But that isn't what I said.
That's what's on the tape, Purser. Now then, I wouldn't use it against you, of course.
Mr. Costello, what is it you want from me?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Well, a minor favor, perhaps.
Go on.
Your ship is going back to Earth after it leaves Borengren.
Yes?
You will have a passenger.
I didn't know that.
To be exact, a mentally deranged man.
Who is he?
His name is Hines. He's been the Earth consul here on Borengren. He's been recalled to Earth to report.
You said he was mentally ill?
He is, but the Earth government doesn't know him.
Well, what can I possibly do?
I wouldn't want Mr. Hines to go back and tell them a lot of lies about what's happened on Borengren.
Well...
Purser, I want you to put this capsule into Mr. Hines's food.
What is it?
Sleeping potion.
You think I'm a murderer, Mr. Costello?
Purser, do you know what will happen if this tape recording of your voice is sent back to Earth? Do you know what they do to pursers who take bribes? You'll be court-martialed.
You'd use it?
Only in the interests of protecting our happy society. Now then, will you see that Mr. Hines is properly sedated? You can get 10 years of Uranus. Well, Purser?
Give me the capsule.
Good. Ride over to the ship, driver.
The first day out, the Earth Council, Mr. Hines, was in his cabin, and I brought him his dinner. He was a tense, nervous little man. Is your dinner, sir?
Put it down, Stuart.
Oh, I'm the purser, sir. The steward's ill, and I'm helping out.
I see. Do you know what's happened on Borengren?
I was only there a few hours, Mr. Hines.
Let me tell you, then. You won't believe it. Nobody will believe it. First, it was a little wedge, driven in the one place it might exist, between the city people and the trappers, the gunkers. Suddenly, the gunkers were a menace. Then came the changes. You didn't have to prove that a gunker had done anything. You just had to prove he was a gunker. It all happened so fast. Pretty soon you were afraid to be alone for a second. There was a man named Costello. He came from Earth.
I know him.
You know him?
He went to Borengren on this ship.
Then you must be the one.
The one? Which one?
Who testified against your captain for the court-martial.
What?
There was a tape recording, your voice and the voice of the third officer. Costello had them.
He used them to send the skipper to Uranus? I didn't know.
You must have known. What's happened to us? What's happened? What?
I got him into his bunk and gave him a sedative. Then I took away the food I'd fixed for him. I still had Costello's poison capsule in my pocket. I went down to the radio room and sent a message to Earth headquarters. 2 days later, we landed. Mr. Hines told his story and I told mine. I showed them the poison capsule and told them what had happened to the skipper and about the tape recorder. Within 24 hours, a task force of the Earth fleet was on its way to Borengren. It wasn't much of a battle, they tell me. The Borengren army didn't have its heart in it. That was, 20 years ago, I guess. About Mr. Costello? I met him again last week, right here on Earth. Funny thing, I was sitting in Central Park on a bench.
Well, 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 if it isn't the purser.
I'm sorry, I don't believe...
Look closer. Don't you recognize me?
No, Why, Mr. Costello... I thought you...
You thought I was on Uranus? I was. I served 20 years. Mind if I sit down?
It's a free Earth.
You know, I'm glad I ran into you. I think you may be just the man that I need.
Need?
Yes. Let me show you something. Here, in this pouch. Recognize these?
They're just live ants.
Exactly. Let me dump them out on the ground.
Won't they crawl away?
They'll come back. Watch. You see, I put a little piece of this bread in the pouch, and I lay it on the ground. See how they crawl back?
Yes, all except that one. He's interested in that dead caterpillar.
Yes, you see, about 1 in 30 I discovered will eat something different. Break away from the pack.
So what?
Don't you see, man? If we can find a way to make the others turn on that 1 in 30, if we can make the bread eaters think that the caterpillar eaters are dangerous...
They're not dangerous, they're just different.
What's the difference? Just so we can get the bread eaters scared enough. They'll turn on the others.
And then?
And then we can make them do anything that we want. You see what I'm driving at? If you think of these ants as people, well, where are you going?
I'm leaving, Mr. Costello.
Why? Doesn't what I say make sense?
Yes, it does, Mr. Costello, except for one thing.
What is that?
I'm no ant. So long, Mr. Costello.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. Follow the news with Chet Huntley tonight on NBC Radio.
X-1, pontooned to yesterday from the 3rd of July, 1956, from NBC. This is an hour of science fiction, pontooned to yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now a mix of sci-fi and horror in this next episode of Lights Out. It stars seasoned radio pro Lorene Tuttle and movie actor Boris Karloff. In the same year of this radio broadcast, he was in 4 motion pictures, Lured, Unconquered, A Doctor and the Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and As Gruesome in Dick Tracy Meets Gruesome. This ABC broadcast called Death Robbery from the 16th of July, 1947.
Things come out of the darkness to prowl the tortured earth. Evil hands stretch forth to seize. Evil eyes are watching. Unholy voices whisper and quarrel in the fearful silence. Death stalks. Loathsome, horrible death. Dare you put out your lights and listen to Boris Karloff in a story of horror in the deepening darkness? Dare you listen to... Lights Out!
I'm glad you brought up the question of ethics, Ed. Sometimes I think science is too ethical. Stands in the way of research.
I don't know, David. Take your work, for example. It's wonderful, but you have to be very cautious. I think working with monkeys is about as far as you should go right now.
Oh, but Ed, David has passed that stage. Why not show Ed the one you worked on today, darling?
If you'd like to see it, Ed. It's right in the lab.
Yes, I would. I saw it last night after you injected the poison.
I'll get it, David.
Thank you, dear. It's in the second cage.
Ruth's a wonderful girl, David. Must be a big help to you in your work.
Don't know what I'd do without her. But if she ever gets too interested in pure science, I'm gonna lock her out of the lab and just make her go back to being a wife.
How do you find time for a wife?
Now, look here. All you practicing surgeons think the research man is a machine. Not me, Ed. Ruth means more to me than all the discoveries I might make. Her happiness is all I live and work for.
Well, I can't say that I blame him. She's a very charming person.
Here he is.
Same one you saw last night, Ed. Stone dead. And there he is, just as healthy and alive as any other monkey.
Why, it's amazing, David. Naturally, I've followed all the experiments along this line, but you seem to have progressed much farther.
David can't go any farther with animals. He's ready for the next step. And he can do it.
Well, I'm all for research, David. But you have a moral obligation in this sort of thing.
How do you know it'll work with human beings? Oh, you're a surgeon yourself, Ed. You know that human beings are animals, just like all the subjects I've used. I know it'll work.
Well, knowing it won't get you far with society, you'll have to submit proof.
I know that, and I've tried every way I can think of to get a human being to demonstrate on.
He's tried insane asylums, penitentiaries, everywhere.
No one will listen to me.
Well, in a way, you can't blame them. Even to me, with my training, the idea seems, well, blasphemous.
My dear Ed, you can't stop scientific progress because of a so-called moral concept.
Besides, what could be less blasphemous than a triumph over death?
I'm sorry, but I can't see it that way. I wouldn't want to try it on me. When I'm dead, I want to stay dead.
Oh, that's foolish, Ed. Well, if I die first, I want David to use me for a subject.
Ruth, don't look so startled, Ed. She's always been my strongest supporter. But I'm not going to use her as a subject. I like her too well as a wife.
Still, it gives me the shivers to hear you talk that way, Ruth.
Why? I've seen David's work grow to where the technique is perfect. Before long, his experiments will be recognized by the whole medical world. And if I can help him achieve that goal, I'm willing to do anything. Living or dead. I mean it.
Said she wanted to do it, Ed, living or dead.
David, you're surely not going to hold her to that. Not now.
Of course I am. She meant it.
But
I called you over here tonight, Ed, because I need help.
Don't tell me that.
But I want you to help me bring Ruth's... to bring her here? That's exactly what I mean.
David...
Will you help me? Or must I bribe some stranger?
David, why don't you give this thing up? It's inhuman.
Ed, if I succeed, I'll have Ruth back. Don't you see how much it means?
Well, yes, if you're successful.
Oh, I've no doubt about that. Look, I've got my laboratory record. 714 times I performed the experiment on guinea pigs, rabbits, monkeys. 714 times it's been successful. Don't you see?
But, David, this is no laboratory experiment. Ruth was your wife.
She is my wife. The only woman I ever loved. That's why I want to bring her back here and start her breathing and living again.
There's an ugly name for what you're asking me to do, David.
I know. Grave robbery. But there's a better name for it, Ed. Death robbery. We'll rob old man Death. Kick the door shut. On the operating table.
I must say you are completely equipped.
It's surgery, just as well as a lab. Everything we need is here.
Well, it's done.
Not yet.
You mean you want me to stay?
Ed, listen. Ever since Ruth... Well, I guess I've leaned on you for everything. I won't ask you to stay, but I do need you. Just a little longer.
All right, David. I'll stay.
Ruth will be the first to thank you when we succeed.
David, I'll always doubt this until I see Ruth living, breathing, smiling again.
It won't be long. Just a matter of 15 or 20 minutes.
If nothing happens. What will you do if your operation doesn't work?
Then you'll have just one more job to do as my friend.
And that?
Be to bury both of us.
Oh, now, look, David.
If Ruth isn't alive again within a few minutes, I'll have lost her forever. And I'll have proved that my whole life's work is useless. I'll have reason enough to use any of a dozen tricks that any good surgeon knows. End the whole business. Oh, but don't look so horrified, Ed. We won't fail. Let's begin.
I should remind you once more, David, that you're usurping powers that belong to God Almighty.
I like to think that Providence has wisely held back the knowledge of things like this until we knew how to use them. And I know how. Hand me that large beaker.
All right. I'm not going to back out on you, David. What shall I do?
Do. You'll work as you haven't worked in surgery before. Thank heavens I've got your skill on my side. Now then, first strap the sphygmomanometer on her arm.
I just happened to think of something.
Keep moving. This is all a matter of timing.
Yeah, but, David...
Here are your instruments. And I want the incision right here where I'm shaving the hair. Make a small incision just at the fontanelle while I prepare the solution.
David, have you considered...
Please, work fast.
But, Dave, what? She was embalmed, you know.
Of course I know that. I have something to replace the blood and counteract the fluid.
It's ghastly.
Finish the cut. I know what I'm doing.
Well, that's all for the incision, but after all...
It'll work, nice. Now cut away the dura mater.
Entirely? Leave the brain exposed?
Yes, yes, I'll fix that. I've done it 700-odd times.
This is no guinea pig or monkey.
Well, I hardly need reminding.
Sorry. What's that?
A compound I've synthesized myself.
What is it?
I call it digammapyridamine. Oh, I know that isn't chemically correct, but it's as close as I can get to it. I knew that something like it must exist. It took 3 years to track it down. It took me that long to make the first drop of it.
Well, you know what you're doing, all right?
Yes, I do. Now then, if you're finished... Take the leads from that storage battery there and attach the positive to the silver plate on the shelf. Put that at her feet.
I feel as if I were doing something unholy.
Place the tip of the negative in the incision you made in the skull. Be sure the tip of the wire actually penetrates the pia mater.
David, what if you bring her back?
I will bring her back.
But what if you bring her back and find she comes back without her soul?
What? Her soul?
Yes.
You're a surgeon, and you believe in a soul?
Well, I hesitate to say there is no such thing.
You've seen a good many deaths, haven't you? Have you ever seen any evidence that the soul escapes at death?
Perhaps I couldn't recognize the evidence.
Let's put it this way, then. If there is any soul, it either leaves the body or stays with it at death. Now, no reputable surgeon or physician has ever been able to report the slightest evidence of the soul having left the body. So, the soul, if there is a soul, must stay with the body, a part of it. I'm ready now, if you've finished.
Everything's set.
Good. Close that switch, then, at the battery. Watch the meter and keep the current between plus and minus 5 of 150. There's a rheostat on the edge of the table. All right?
All right.
Now, I'm going to inject 10 cc's of adrenaline in the brachial artery.
Adrenaline?
Adrenaline and something else. There. God, she's beautiful, Ed.
Yes. She was.
She is. You'll see her in a few minutes, just as she was.
I wonder what you'll have to tell us.
Nothing. Death is only a transcendental sleep.
Do you really believe that, dear?
Oh, well, what's the difference? How's the current?
Let's see. What? Let's jump to 180.
Good. Bring it back to 150. That's the result of the injection.
On a dead body?
Let's say suspended animation. There are still a few things in surgery you don't know, aren't there?
I never dreamed of a reaction like that.
I'll show you more. Help me swing this lamp over here.
But...
Let the ammeter go. It'll hold steady for a minute now.
But it might jump again.
No, it won't. I've been all through this before. The reactions are exactly the same as the others.
And this lamp? X-rays?
No, it's a modification of the cathode ray. And just another of my developments. I call these our theta rays.
Well, why do you call them that?
Well, most rays are named for the first few letters in the Greek alphabet. Alpha, beta, gamma, and so on.
Well, that explains theta. Didn't you say R-theta?
Yes. But theta was called the letter of death by the ancient Greeks.
Well, that's right. It was the first letter in the word thanatos. Death. I see. A theta without death.
Maybe I was too sentimental.
Maybe. At least human for once.
Let's not argue. Here goes the ray. Now, quickly. The solution.
Inject it?
No, pump it. I built this pump especially for it. There's the pump switch, Ed.
Here?
Yeah. Turn it on and watch the ammeter.
Okay. It's jumping.
How far?
155.
Let it go.
160. 170.
Hold it there. It'll stay there now. Listen carefully.
Yes.
The soon as I turn off the pump, I want Spigmo readings.
But there won't be any blood pressure.
Wait and see. Give me a reading each time I ask for it and take them carefully. Are you ready?
This is fantastic. I'm ready.
Okay. Reading.
Systolic zero. Diastolic zero.
That's all right. It will take a few seconds. Now.
40.
My God. Diastolic. Hurry.
Zero.
My aortic valve is still open. I'll turn off the ray. Reading.
48. Over 42. David.
Not yet. Now the stopwatch. 7 seconds after I say go, I want the systolic. Now you have it?
Right.
Ready. Now. Go. Just a few more minutes. All right, Ed. Now the ray again. We'll know the answer very soon.
How long do you use the ray this time, David?
Not long. Give me a reading.
68. Over 67.
Now.
70.
Diastolic.
68.
Now.
David. 118. 76.
Close. Now.
120. That's it. 80.
The stethoscope, quick! Here. Listen. As I can tell, respiration's normal, pulse just a tiny bit fast, and the reflex is slow, but apparently all right.
David, I feel I must apologize to you.
Apologize? Why?
Well, for doubting you, I suppose.
You'll learn to believe me.
I'm very calm in the face of all this. Do you realize that you've performed a miracle?
A miracle? I've brought my wife back to me, as I promised her.
It's an unholy thing, but...
But we've conquered death. Is that unholy?
We have conquered death. May God forgive us.
She'll only wake now.
How long has she been asleep?
Let me see. 11 hours.
Hasn't spoken at all?
Not since that first scream, when she fell asleep.
Have you given her anything?
Just a few drops of brandy.
Have you tried to wake her?
No, but I think I'll try now.
Oh, wait a minute before you do.
Why?
Well, I hate to keep harping on this business about a soul, David. I realize this is no place for a philosophic discussion, but I can't help wondering why Ruth screamed when she first came back to life.
Well, I think there's a logical explanation. After all, it must have been a physical shock.
That's true. It must also be true that there was a great mental shock involved. I think that's why she screamed, and I'm wondering whether there's been a permanent effect on her mind. Or, as I prefer to think of it, her soul.
Oh, you're simply borrowing trouble, Ed. I've never seen any sign of permanent damage in my other experiments.
Don't forget that Ruth was a human being.
Well, there's only one way to find out. I'm going to wake her.
You're not afraid?
Afraid? Of what? Ruth. Ruth. Wake up, darling. Ruth, dear, it's David speaking. Wake up, dearest. Ruth.
Ruth. Ah! There, darling. No wonder it scared a poor girl. Ruth, it's David, dear. I kept my promise and you're alive again.
Father,
oh, you're all right, honey. It's David, you're... Ruth. Ruth.
David. David, what's the matter?
Ruth. God, is her mind.
No, David. Her soul.
David, you'd better go out for a little exercise now.
I'll stay here with her.
I'll stay while you go out and walk around a bit. You've been there with her since 8 o'clock last night without any let-up. Go on, I'll stay.
Ed.
I know, old boy. I'd give anything myself if we could undo what we've done, but...
Ed, what could I do?
Well, there may be something. Let's try an experiment when she wakes up again.
What kind of an experiment?
Well, let's see if we can talk to her, get her to say anything. If we can get a flicker of intelligence, maybe we can teach her, build up from a small fragment.
Maybe it might work. I'm going to wake her up and try it.
Well, not now. Why don't you take a walk? Relax a little. And get something to eat while you're out.
Eat? I can't eat. I'm going to wake her. Ruth. Ruth.
David, why not let her sleep?
She's waking up now. Ruth. Hello, Ruth. Are you waking up?
Poor child.
There. She repeats after me. A little. Maybe it will work, Ed. Ruth. David. It works.
Seems to. Ruth, say I want a glass of water.
Seems to.
I want a glass of water.
Water.
It's too long for a... Ruth. Say, Ruth.
Ruth.
Loves.
Loves.
David.
David.
Ruth. Loves David.
Ruth loves David.
Ruth loves David.
Ruth loves David. Ruth loves David.
It's working, Ed.
Maybe. But what is she thinking?
I don't know.
No, no.
Ruth, stop it.
Stop it.
Wait a minute, old man.
Ruth
loves too much
David.
For you, tired as you are. Go on, I'll take a little walk and I'll work with her for a while.
Stop.
Your nerves won't take much of this.
Oh, I guess you're right, Ed. I can't
Ruth
think anymore.
Ruth loves.
I'll be right there.
Fine. Uh-huh. I'll take good care of her and see what I can find out.
Be patient.
Don't worry. I will. And you get something to eat while you're out.
All right, I'll try.
Poor guy, this is really rough on him.
Rough on him?
Ruth.
We're
kidding ourselves. There's nothing there. She's a parrot.
Dad!
Never mind, Ruth. Ruth, put down that scalpel.
Scalpel!
You'll hurt yourself. Ruth! Stay away! Don't put it down! Think of David!
Ed,
for God's sake, what happened? I'll get something and fix you right up.
Wait. No use.
Now, look.
Doctor. Artery. No hope.
Ed.
All right, Doctor. Your diagnosis is correct.
A minute or two left. Ruth's hiding. Watch out. No soul. She'll kill you, too.
What have I done, Ed? Everything I've done is wrong.
Wonderful technique, Doctor. Congratulations. What about soul?
Ed. Ruth. She's somewhere in the house. What if she gets out and a scalpel in her hands? Been enough damage. Ruth! Ruth! Basement. I'd better take a gun. Ruth, now give me that scalpel. You'll hurt yourself. Ruth.
Ruth, no, David.
Ruth, come back.
Ruth, no, David.
Come back! Hello? Yes? Oh. Hello, Doctor. Well, I've been busy in the lab. No. No, there's nothing new. Just an experiment. No. Like so many experiments, it just didn't work out.
Eversharp Schick has just presented Boris Karloff in the first of the new series of mystery and terror stories, Lights Out.
Lights Out, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 16th, 1947 on ABC. And that does it for this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.